Israel has for the Palestinian economy as a whole. Lives cannot, therefore, be enjoyed by the Palestinians, especially with respect to the way that Israelis are enjoyed. Let's see what our guests think about this. Let me bring Rabia Billings Netuno back into the picture. She's a pro-Palestinian and human rights activist. Rabia Billings Netuno, welcome back to the program. When you take a look at what's happened with the Palestinians, there is a movement called BDS, which I'm sure you're well aware of, the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanction, which has been in the works for quite some time. But now that this war has happened, there are calls for it to really get enforced, to be rebooted. What do you think? What are the chances of that?
More and more people are moving towards this. It's definitely what helped us in South Africa. BDS has been beneficial to South Africa. In fact, today I received a petition against the U.S. UK government to stop trading with Israel just today. And there were 87,000 signatures on that petition. So in South Africa, if we didn't have BDS, I don't think our political situation would have changed. When countries continue to do trade with Israel, even though they break international law and they've been breaking international law, there's no recourse. There's no recourse. And Israel will continue what they are doing to Palestinians.
Yeah, indeed. That's part of the problem, that there is no recourse. Blaine Coleman rejoins us now. Blaine Coleman is actually, as we mentioned before, a BDS activist and campaigner, so who better to talk about this than him? Blaine Coleman, welcome back to the program. You know, this BDS movement is great in the structure and what it promotes when it comes to basically sanctioning and boycotting Israel. But do you think that it has reached the peak that it could? Or has not, and why hasn't it? Because at this point, it's a perfect time to actually reinvigorate this movement.
I hope so, Kaveh. The international movement against apartheid South Africa, to boycott South Africa, sanction South Africa, divest from South Africa, is one of the main things that brought that apartheid regime down. And I hope there is the will internationally to do the same thing against this last apartheid state on earth, the apartheid state of Israel. We don't forget that apartheid Israel was an extremely intimate ally of apartheid South Africa. Israel tried to give South Africa, apartheid South Africa, atomic bombs. This was reported in The Guardian. So this is the kind of regime that got defeated finally by sanctions. And I know eventually apartheid Israel will be defeated by sanctions and boycotts in the same way. Yeah, this is the time to do it. You bet this is the time to do it.
Gaza Strip, the crisis is even worse. The Gaza Strip has been subjected to a land, air, and sea blockade, as well as recurrent military offensives. Some 2.3 million people live in the narrow coastal strip. Recent data shows that the combined contribution of the manufacturing and agriculture sectors as a percentage of GDP in Gaza went down from 27% in 1994 to 17% in 2021. In a 2023 report, UN agencies estimated that 58% of Gaza Strip residents required humanitarian assistance, with 29% of Gazan households living in extreme or catastrophic conditions. There are now calls to do more to put economic pressure on Israel to stop choking the Palestinian economy. One of those tools is the boycott, sanctions, and divestment movement. The anti-racist, non-violent BDS movement represents tens of millions worldwide. BDS has called for ending international state, corporate and institutional complicity in Israel's regime of oppression so that the Palestinians can enjoy UN-stipulated rights. The movement can now play a more active role in putting pressure on Israel. Furthermore, calls are growing to impose sanctions on Israel. Iran's foreign minister, Hossein Amir Abdollahian, has called on the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, OIC member states, to impose political and economic sanctions and an embargo on Israel.
The constant policy of usurping the Palestinian lands, continuation of settlement construction, destruction of farmland and residential houses, torturing women, children, and men, and controlling the water resources and electricity, they are nothing but crimes against humanity. Islamic countries must coordinate efforts to immediately put an end to the war crimes of the Israeli regime committed against civilians, especially women and children.
Hello and welcome to the Quick Take section. I'm Mahdi Abbasian. When it comes to the occupied Palestinian territories, the Israeli control of Palestinians' economic life is what we would like to focus on. So let's take a look at a day in the life of a Palestinian, which is quite different than what an Israeli is experiencing. At 7:30 a.m., a Palestinian takes a shower. When it comes to water, Palestinians in the West Bank must buy water from Israel's National Water Company, which appropriates 80% of the West Bank water supply. 8:30 a.m., time to fill up the car with gas to drive to work, to Ramallah or Al-Quds usually. Israel has prevented Palestinians from accessing oil and gas reserves on their own territory, making them dependent on Israel for their energy needs. 8:45, driving to work. Israel maintains over 98 fixed checkpoints and hundreds of random flying checkpoints choking Palestinian freedom of movement. 1 p.m., time to buy lunch. There is no Palestinian currency. Everyone uses the Israeli shekel, which means that Israel is capable of blocking any future attempts to create a Palestinian currency. 3 p.m., buy a book online. This points to import and export. All Palestinian imports go through the Israeli customs system. Israeli authorities can block any import from reaching its recipient. One of the problems for Palestinians not only in Gaza but for the West Bank is the issue of water. Without water, it is hard for Palestinians to live, let alone exist. This shows the average daily water consumption per person from Israel's to the WHO recommended minimum. It is obvious here how Palestinians are consuming and the West Bank Palestinian communities who are not hooked up to the water grid. And now let's look at Israel. A bleak economic picture is facing the regime. Businesses all across the board are suffering. Companies ranging from airlines to banks have shut operations, asking their employees to work from home. When it comes to travel, several Asian, European, and U.S. airlines have suspended direct flights to Tel Aviv. Chevron, the second largest oil and gas producer in the U.S., has been ordered by Israel's Ministry of Energy to shut down the Tamar natural gas field off. Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan Chase has asked employees at its office in Tel Aviv to work from home. Bank of America has closed its Tel Aviv office. That's the end of this Quick Take segment.
The Israel regime needs to pay attention to the economic fallout of the war that it is waging with the blessing of the U.S. It's going to take a long time for confidence to return to the Israeli economy, if there is an Israeli economy to return to. The specter of war will always loom if the Palestinian cause is not resolved. And in order for that to happen, it can't be anything less than all of Palestine to be free in order to bring about economic freedom for Palestinians. A dream? A reality? Let us know what you think. By the way, behind me, we chose that to be the topic of our ending, and that's the BDS reboot, which can be fatal when it comes to Israel, its existence, and of course, its economy. From Mikhail Tavli and the team here at Economic Divide, it's goodbye until the next program.
option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. In the limelight.
Former U.S. President Donald Trump is set to testify on 6th of November at his New York civil fraud trial, following his three eldest children to the witness stand in a case that threatens to disrupt their family's real estate empire. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The national broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. After more than 4 weeks of testimony in former President Donald Trump's New York civil fraud trial, Trump and three of his adult children will soon be called to testify. Attorneys for New York Attorney General Letitia James said on Friday, 27th of October. Letitia James's team has long indicated that Donald Trump, his son Donald Trump Jr., another son, Eric Trump, and daughter, Ivanka Trump, would be questioned on the stand. And Friday, 27th of October, an attorney for Letitia James said the state will rest after they testify. The Trumps and their company have already been found liable for fraud in the case, but the trial has proceeded on allegations relating to falsification of business records, insurance fraud, and conspiracy. The state is seeking at least $250 million in what it calls ill-gotten gains and harsh penalties that would severely restrict Trump business in New York. They're accused of misrepresenting the values of Trump properties and inflating estimates of Donald Trump's wealth in order to obtain favorable terms on loans and insurance. Letitia James's office said the alleged scheme benefited them to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars. The defendants have all denied the allegations against them and accused Letitia James of pursuing them for political gain. Donald Trump has repeatedly stood just outside the courtroom doors, lashing out at Letitia James and the judge in the case, accusing them of being unfair and biased against him. That anger has occasionally earned the ire of Judge Arthur Engoron, who has twice fined Donald Trump for violating a limited gag order Engoron put in place after Trump made a derogatory social media post about a court clerk. On Wednesday, 25th of October, Judge Engoron even put Donald Trump on the stand to question him about a comment that Engoron ultimately concluded was about the clerk. Ivanka Trump, Trump's daughter, was initially named in the lawsuit when it was filed in 2022, but this summer she successfully moved an appellate court to dismiss the allegations against her. That court found the allegations, which related to her involvement in loans to the Trump Organization, were outside the statute of limitations. But still, New York Attorney General Letitia James's office subpoenaed her to appear in this case. Ivanka Trump contested the subpoena, but Judge Arthur Engoron ruled against her on Friday, 27th of October. Letitia James's office expects to call Donald Trump Jr. to stand on 1st of November, another Trump son, Eric Trump, to the stand on 2nd of November, and daughter Ivanka Trump to the stand on 3rd of November. If that schedule holds, Donald Trump himself will be called to testify under oath on 6th of November. The Associated Press has also covered this story and tells us more. Donald Trump is set to testify on 6th of November at his New York civil fraud trial, following his three eldest children to the witness stand in a case that threatens to disrupt the family's real estate empire. It was already expected that the former president and sons Donald Trump Jr. and Eric Trump would testify. The timing became clear on Friday after Judge Arthur Engoron ruled that daughter Ivanka Trump must also appear in the court, rejecting her bid to avoid testifying. The schedule sets up a blockbuster stretch in the trial of New York Attorney General Letitia James's lawsuit. She alleges that the former president, now the Republican frontrunner for 2024, overstated his wealth for years on financial statements that were given to banks, insurers, and others to help secure loans and deals. Donald Trump denies any wrongdoing and has called the trial a politically motivated sham. The case could strip Donald Trump of some of his corporate holdings and marquee properties such as the Trump Tower. Letitia James and Judge Arthur Engoron are Democrats. Donald Trump and two of his sons are defendants in the lawsuit, but the state is initially calling them to the stand before the defense begins its case. The defense can then call them again. In a surprise preview, Donald Trump ended up briefly testifying on Wednesday, 25th of October, to answer Judge Engoron's questions about whether an out-of-court comment was aimed at his law clerk. The judge had earlier barred participants in the trial from talking publicly about court staffers. Trump said his remarks wasn't about the court clerk, but Judge Arthur Engoron called that testimony not credible and fined Donald Trump $10,000 on top of a $5,000 fine imposed days earlier over an online post about the court clerk. Trump's lawyers paid both fines on his behalf, but still might appeal against them, according to a court filing on Friday, 27th of October. Donald Trump Jr., Donald Trump's son, is now set to testify next Wednesday. His brother, Eric Trump, will testify on Thursday, and sister Ivanka Trump will testify on 3rd of November, though her lawyers may appeal to try to block her testimony. An appeals court dismissed her as a defendant in a lawsuit in June, saying the claims against her were too old. Ivanka Trump announced in January of 2017, ahead of her father's inauguration, that she was stepping away from her job as an executive vice president at the family company, the Trump Organization. She soon became an unpaid senior advisor in the Trump White House. After her father's one term ended, she moved to Florida. Her lawyer, Bennett Moskowitz, told the judge on Friday that state lawyers just don't have jurisdiction over her. One of Donald Trump's attorneys, Christopher Keyes, maintained that state lawyers just want another free-for-all on another of President Trump's children. The idea that somehow Ivanka Trump is under the control of the Trump Organization or any of the defendants, her father, anyone who has raised a daughter past the age of 13 knows that they're not under their control, the attorney Kai said. However, the state's lawyers argued that Ivanka Trump was a key participant in some events discussed in the case and remains financially and professionally intertwined with the family business. Judge Arthur Engoron sided with the state, citing documents showing that Ivanka Trump continued to have ties to some business in New York and still owns various apartments in Manhattan. Ms. Trump has clearly availed herself of the privilege of doing business in New York, Judge Engoron said. During her years at the Trump Organization, Ivanka Trump was involved in negotiating and securing finances for various properties, including a lease and a loan for a Washington hotel and loans for Donald Trump's Doral Golf Resort near Miami, Florida, and a Trump-owned hotel and condominium skyscraper in Chicago, Illinois, according to court filings. According to the New York Attorney General's office, Ivanka Trump retained a financial interest in the Trump Organization's operations even after leaving for the White House, including through an interest in the now-sold Washington Hotel. In court papers that included emails and other documents, the state lawyer said the Trump Organization and its staff also have bought insurance for Ivanka Trump and her businesses, managed her household staff and credit card bills, rented her apartment, and paid her legal fees.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Since October the 7th, Israel has launched a relentless bombing campaign against the people of Gaza. The bombardments have claimed the lives of thousands of innocent Palestinians, most of them women and children. Israel's genocidal war on the people of Palestine has sparked mass rallies across the world. Journalists, activists, and even athletes have joined the growing calls to put an end to the carnage. But most of these voices are being suppressed due to the pressure by Israel and Zionist lobbies. Reports have been circulating at an alarming pace about activists being sacked from their positions, journalists being relieved of their duties, and even athletes being stripped of their contracts. The editor-in-chief of an academic journal said that he was fired from his job after sharing an article about people dying in Gaza. Michael Eisen, a geneticist at the University of California, Berkeley, and the editor of the scientific journal eLife, tweeted to say that he had been informed that he is being replaced as the publication's editor. Egyptian TikToker Karim Kabani said he had been sacked from his job in France because he made three videos on TikTok in support of the people of Palestine. Jackson Frank, who was recently appointed as the Sixers beat writer for Philly Voice, was relieved of his duties after sending out a tweet in solidarity with the people of Palestine. Frank, a vocal supporter of Palestine, in one of his tweets days after his unceremonious sacking, termed the Israeli atrocities against the people in Gaza as, quote, genocide. In the Canadian city of Ontario, the New Democratic Party, NDP, expelled MPP Sarah Jama from the caucus earlier this week for her statements in support of Palestinians.
Governments and institutions in Canada are trying to use their voice to wait to silence us, to silence workers, students, educators, and peace-loving people who dare to support Palestine. And to every person who's taking a risk to speak up for Palestinian dignity and safety, I see you and I hear you and I am with you. They try hard to silence us, but we know that our words are powerful, and we must continue to speak up, no matter the cost.
In a series of tweets, Sarah Jama called for an immediate ceasefire and de-escalation. Mahad Akil, one of the top agents in Hollywood, also had to call it quits from her role at the Creative Artists Agency, CAA, after she posted in support of Palestine. And Tanya Singh, a unionist from Minneapolis, said she had been terminated from her job in a union for anti-Semitism over her support for Palestine.
Governments across the world, in an attempt to address anti-Semitism and somehow redress the horrors of the Holocaust, are allowing Israel to get away with apartheid, ethnic cleansing, detention of children, torture, restriction of movement and other freedoms, and the illegal occupation of land. After every genocide, the world cries out, never again. And yet here you see another attempted genocide unfold right in front of your eyes, and you don't just watch on quietly, but actively supporting the oppressor.
Meanwhile, the crisis in Gaza has unveiled Western double standards regarding the issue of Palestinians and their cause. Western nations have tried their best to silence pro-Palestine voices. Germany, for example, has in recent weeks moved hysterically to ban pro-Palestine demonstrations altogether, smearing them as quote-unquote anti-Semitic gatherings. Berlin has violently cracked down on Palestinian activists. French Interior Minister Gerald Darmanin has declared an outright ban on all Palestine-related protests. In addition, those standing in solidarity with the Palestinian cause are also reportedly being stopped, questioned and fined. In the UK, the Rishi Sunak government has come out openly in support of the Israeli regime's genocidal campaign in the besieged Gaza Strip. Home Secretary Suella Braverman insisted that waving the Palestinian flag could amount to inciting racism or violence. At the same time, Prime Minister Sunak demanded all state buildings should display the Israeli flag. The response by the European officials to the massacre in the Gaza Strip and the subsequent intensifications of the siege and the indiscriminate bombing of civilians by Tel Aviv has laid bare the hypocrisy of the European leaders and their blatant bias towards Israel.
We know for sure that we represent the views of the majority of people in Ireland. We represent the views of our Parliament, and we genuinely believe that we represent the views of the majority of European citizens who have taken to the streets in their tens and hundreds of thousands over the past number of days, appalled by the stance of the EU so-called leaders who have been complicit in genocide and ethnic cleansing by allowing Israel to behave as it does.
Just days ago, more than 800 EU officials wrote a letter to the bloc's chief, Ursula von der Leyen, criticizing her uncontrolled support of Israel. The signatories of the letter said there is a seeming indifference demonstrated over the past few days by our institution towards the ongoing massacre of civilians in the Gaza Strip in disregard for human rights and international humanitarian law. The letter represents deep division within the bloc on how to approach the Israel-Gaza war.
The war in Gaza is in its third week, and Israel has been hinting at a ground operation for several days. Israeli forces, backed by heavy deployment of U.S. warships in the region, have taken positions close to the besieged Strip's frontiers, while at the same time warplanes continue to indiscriminately pound Gaza. The regime, however, keeps delaying the ground invasion, citing the need to enhance the readiness of its forces and the issue of the captives. However, informed sources have told Press TV that Israeli forces have actually tried a ground offensive, and that twice. The first try happened on Sunday afternoon, as an Israeli brigade was ambushed by Palestinian resistance forces when trying to enter Gaza's Rafah border. Two bulldozers and a tank belonging to the regime were hit, and some 10 tanks were left as the Israeli soldiers fled for their lives. The second failed ground invasion, Press TV source said, happened hours later on Sunday night. This time, more than 20 Israeli tanks were repelled on the way to Khan Yunis. The regime's military later reported that one soldier was killed and three were injured by an anti-tank missile shot by Hamas during a raid into the Gaza Strip. The Qassam Brigades, the armed wing of Hamas, announced later on its Telegram account that it had pushed Israeli forces back into the occupied territories. The next day, Tel Aviv announced that it had decided to delay the ground war in Gaza, pending the arrival of additional American forces in the region. Meanwhile, Hamas and other Palestinian resistance factions have expressed full readiness for any battle on the ground, warning that Gaza will turn into a graveyard for invaders in the event of a ground offensive.
I think this is part of their plan. We are expecting this to happen. But what we hear from the people, from the military wing, that we believe that if they try to enter Gaza again, it will be the what we call it the Maqbara. They will be not only defeated, but they will be buried here in Gaza Strip.
Following the October 7 surprise operation by Hamas, the delusion of Israel's invincible military and intelligence power was shattered. The Al-Aqsa flood operation demonstrated that Hamas and other resistance groups are totally capable of performing offensive operations. On the other hand, resistance movements across the region have warned that in the event of U.S. intervention, all American outposts in West Asia will turn into legitimate targets. The question remains whether Washington is ready to take this dangerous risk or not.
They have tried to suppress the voice of the Palestinians. Common catchphrases, all-out support for Israel, unwavering support, and the likes. But finally, the world is not buying it. No amount of media coverage can cover up the Israeli crimes, including America's all-out support.
And we stand with the Palestinians, and we stand with Arabs. And they try and change the narrative because you own the narrative, see? This is our problem. You own the narrative. You own the United Nations. You own Hollywood. You own all these mouthpieces. Where are our voices? Our voices need to be heard as well. We've been watching your channel. And instead of mourning our dead, instead of mourning these Palestinian children, we've been having to deal with more dehumanization of Arabs.
And the proof that the tide is turning are in the worldwide protests.
Here just to show the support for our people in Gaza.
What we're experiencing today, it's happening in Palestine, is a genocide.
I'm here because I'm a Jew born in Jerusalem, and I'm horrified and enraged that my government here in the U.S. is sending weapons and money and never-ending unconditional diplomatic support for Israel.
The world rallying behind Palestinians and Palestine. And it's not because Israel is murdering Palestinians, mostly women and children. Just think about it. How can this war bring out so many people from all corners of the world in such high numbers? It's because the world has been educated. It's informed now. It has witnessed four wars before. And it has seen the daily oppression and killing of Palestinians under an apartheid regime. Now U.S. politicians are speaking in a way that they haven't before.
Congresswoman representing the Massachusetts 7th Congressional District.
Where is your humanity? How do you look at one atrocity and say this is wrong? But you watch as bodies pile up, as neighborhoods are leveled. Israel has dropped more bombs in the last 10 days than we dropped in a whole year in Afghanistan. Where is your humanity? Where is your outrage? Where is your care?
The passion in her voice from an American politician is for life and how it's being snuffed out, taken away with a missile, ones that are made in the USA. Since the war started, 45 cargo planes transported weapons from the U.S. to Israel. Among the military aid, around 1,000 tons of armaments, including 155-millimeter artillery shells, military vehicles, and supplies.
To President Biden and his administration, generations will not forget, and history will be recorded, that it was your administration, your billions of dollars, your support with weapons of mass destruction.
A veteran U.S. State Department official quit over what he described as the Biden administration's intellectual bankruptcy, in which he said Biden is rushing to provide arms to Israel, which is short-sighted, destructive, unjust, and contradictory to the very values that we publicly espouse. A CBS poll asked whether the U.S. should send weapons to Israel. More than half the respondents said that it should not. That is another first. And while we are on first-time occurrences, this is a first, which occurred at the Human Rights Council session in Geneva. The council members turned their back to the American ambassador's speech in Geneva. This happened during her speech preaching about human rights, while America's all-out support and bombs were killing Palestinians as she was speaking. The true face of the Israeli regime and the U.S. backing has rocked the U.S. status quo when it comes to Israel. Widespread attempts to suppress pro-Palestinian voices have reached unprecedented levels in the U.S. The cancellation of major conferences, demands for the dismissal of workers who express support for Palestinians, and intimidation campaigns against Arab American voices critical of Israeli policies are just some examples. This has even affected U.S. lawmakers, like Senator Elizabeth Warren, once a U.S. presidential candidate, in which more than 260 of her staffers signed an open letter demanding that she call for an immediate ceasefire between Israel and Hamas, describing Israel as increasingly fascist, that commits war crimes and enforces a brutal apartheid, calling for an immediate ceasefire. But only certain U.S. lawmakers have the guts to openly support Palestine.
You know what's so hard sometimes is watching those videos and the people telling the kids don't cry and like let them cry. And they're shaking and somebody, you know this, they keep telling them not to cry in Arabic. They can cry, I can cry, we all can cry. If we're not crying, something is wrong. And so I'm telling you right now, President Biden, not all America's with you on this one.
Previous Israeli crimes are no secret. Kana, 1996. Israel bombed a UN shelter, killing 106 civilians, mostly kids. Israel was never held accountable. Lebanon, 1982. The Sabra and Shatila massacre resulted in the killings of between 2,000 and 3,500 Palestinian refugees and Lebanese civilians in 2 days in the city of Beirut. Previous massacres of Palestinians by Israel have been etched in people's minds, especially the wars on the Gaza Strip, which is why the BDS movement, Boycott, Divestment, and Sanction, requires a reboot, one to include Israeli officials, including the pilots who dropped the bombs, on the Palestinians. After all, now is the time that sanctioning Israeli products could prove successful, since Israel's economy is tanking due to the war. We mentioned a couple of first-time incidents before. Here's another. Thousands of Muslims praying in front of the U.S. Congress to demand a ceasefire in Gaza. A scene that creates a sense of deja vu. For this is reminiscent of how Palestinians have prayed in front of the Al-Aqsa Mosque in their future capital.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. Gaza, tiny strip as vast as mankind's future.
more than 70 years that Arab governments have closed their eyes on Gaza. We have no hopes on opening the blind eyes. You haven't done anything for us, and you won't. However, we pray, may Allah heal your blind eyes and soften your hearts. O people of the world, this message may be my last message. I give this message to you from beneath the fire and bombs. We are at Al-Shati camp. This message may be my last message. O people of the world, deliver our message to the world. Tell them that our women and children are being killed in front of our eyes on a daily basis. Right behind me, there is bombardments. But I swear to God that we aren't afraid of being bombed. We're being killed, yet we don't care. We take refuge in God, not from bombs, but from you. My tears are not out of fear, but out of shame. Being shameful of your weakness, shameful of the weakness of the Islamic Ummah. We take refuge to God from your indifference. Today, indifference means betrayal. We will never forgive you, never forgive you. God is sufficient for us. He is our best supporter. Hasbunallah wa ni'mal wakil. God is sufficient for us, and we will never bow to humiliation. History will tell Gaza fought alone, while 50 Arab and Islamic countries were just watching and did nothing. History will tell people of Gaza had no food, water, and medicine, but the world didn't care a fig, and that Arab countries, out of fear, weren't able to send humanitarian aid to them. History will tell, while leaders of Arab governments scrambled to normalize ties with the criminal regime of Israel, Gaza children had no power to breathe under the rubbles. They were hungry and they had no home to shelter them. History will tell, Gaza, which is a tiny land, being under complete siege for more than 17 years, brought to its knees an army, which 21 Arab armies were afraid of. And history will tell, Gaza drew the path of the Islamic Ummah, stood steadfast on its stances, and didn't surrender to the occupying enemy and its allies. It's for more than 70 years that Arab governments have closed their eyes on Gaza. We have no hopes on opening the blind eyes. You haven't done anything for us and you won't. However, we pray, make God heal your blind eyes and soften your hearts. You're sleeping so deeply that even the biggest crimes were not able to wake you up. It's for 75 years that Zionists have committed these crimes with the support of the US and the UK. They have destroyed our houses and have expelled us from our homeland. Zionists have taken captive our boys and girls, our youth and the elderly, or they have murdered them. They even didn't and don't have mercy on Palestinian refugee camps. 75 years ago, when Zionists invaded the Yassin village in Beit al-Muqaddas from three sides and shot and killed all the villagers in cold blood and burnt their bodies while you were asleep. 41 years ago, when Zionists brutally massacred 2,000 innocent people, including women and children, young and the elderly in Sabra and Shatila, again, your eyes were closed. You were asleep when young little boys were being shot. When Zionists and their allies cut open the pregnant women's belly and took their fetus out and cut them into pieces, you were asleep. when we lost our whole family members while we were only a child and we never met them again, you were asleep. When Zionists placed mines under the dead bodies so that no one could dare to lift them, you were asleep yet again. So how can one expect the recent Gaza bombings make you wake up? The story that is happening in Gaza these days is the same story for you, which might deepen your sleep rather than wake you up. I just wanted to know if you could sleep the night these calamities would be brought to you. Zionists claim to possess the world and everything in it, whether animate or inanimate. They feel as if these properties are lent to you by them just for a few days. And so they recognize the right to take back what they have claimed to have lent you in any way possible. They have even such assumptions about you. In their view, you or anybody who is not a Zionist is not basically a human. Rather, he is an animal in form of a human who must serve Jews only. In the Zionist view, you are all slaves who, after the advent of the Jews' savior, would get back to your original status, that is, slavery for the Jews. It's for years that they read such beliefs from their distorted holy book and teach them to their children. We, under shell and fire, warn you. If you don't wake up, if today's story of Gaza doesn't soften your hearts and don't take a sleep away from your eyes, if you don't do anything for saving Gaza, undoubtedly, tomorrow would be your turn to be bombed, plundered, and occupied. Believe that this bloodthirsty child killer tribe is a descendant of God's prophet. The God who is merciful and is more kind to his servants than their mother, and a prophet who said in his famous 10th commandments, "You shall have no other God before me. Honor your father and mother. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Thou shalt not bear false witness, thou shalt not steal, and you shall not covet," which means do not want something that belongs to someone else. Judaism, at the initial days of the start of its prophet's mission, was affected by distortion and treachery. Prophet Moses departed to Mount Sinai and stayed there for 40 days and nights by God's command. In his absence, the Jews forgot God and all his prophets' teachings and started worshipping a calf. Now, after 3,000 years from Prophet Moses' passing, what can we expect from Jews? Can we say that the tribe, which only acknowledges itself as human and assumes the whole world and what is inside it as property inherited by their fathers, are followers of Prophet Moses? Can a tribe who authorizes any crime, including murder and looting, in order to exploit the world, be follower of a prophet who said, "Do not want something that belongs to someone else"? No, I swear to God that Zionists do not know God and his prophet. Zionists even don't know something as humanity. They don't know moralities, nor do they have something as affection in them. They are the ones that God has said about them in the Noble Quran. Those are like livestock. Rather, they are more astray. Gaza is a tiny strip which has just a total land area of about 360 square kilometers and is under siege for 17 years. However, it will never surrender to the avarice of the deviant and bloodthirsty enemy. Gaza is standing solely against a dragon who intends to swallow the whole world. Today, the body of Gaza is full of scars. But the only things that come to your mind about Gaza are zeal, courage, and bravery of its people. Our children, like little angels, fly to the sky every day. They have tasted death rather than life, and they are paying the price of your sleeping eyes. We will never forgive you, never forgive you. We will take our complaint to God, who is the just ruler and is sufficient for us. History will tell, Gaza fought alone. History will tell, Gaza fought not just for itself, but also for saving the world while the world was asleep in negligence. History will tell, Gaza brought to its knees an army which no one dared to confront. And history will tell, Palestine was liberated by those who had nothing. No food, no water, not even a piece of cloth for shrouding their martyrs.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The following is the part of the speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution in a meeting with President Raisi and his cabinet on August 30, 2023, on the occasion of Government Week. This week is adorned with the names of the two noble martyrs, Martyr Rajai and Martyr Bahonar. Their goal is seeking Allah's satisfaction and serving the people, which also brings God's satisfaction. Almighty Allah wants us to serve the people. So this is important. The code words for all our administrations should be seeking Allah's satisfaction and working to serve the people. Our goal should be summed up in these two things. If God's satisfaction becomes our goal, it will affect all of our activities, actions, and way of working. When you are at home thinking about the work that has been assigned to you, or you have a heavy workload from the ministry and you have no choice but to take it home and work on it at home, no one realizes this. No one praises you for it, and no one knows about it, but you do it anyway. Why? You do it seeking Allah's satisfaction. This is the right thing to do. This affects our work. This affects the appointments we make.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The There is a sentence in Sahifat al-Sajjadiyah regarding God's satisfaction by Imam al-Sajjad alayhi salam, who asks Almighty Allah, "Bless me that I may prefer your satisfaction over everything else, both in the case of friends and enemies." If a person is like this, then my enemy will be safe from any wrongdoing and injustice from me, and my friend will despair of me being inclined to falsely favor him and from misplaced kindness from me. This is mentioned in the supplication number 22 of Sahifat al-Sajjadiyah. This is very important. If my goal is God's satisfaction, my enemy will know with certainty that I will not oppress him. He is my enemy, but he is sure that I will not act unjustly towards him. My friend will also be certain that I will not favor him over others because of our friendship. We will be like this in the appointments we make. If we keep God's satisfaction in mind, we will be careful to employ the person who is suitable for the position, not someone who is merely our friend and not deserving of the role. This is one of the characteristics of seeking God's satisfaction.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
With you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
On Saturday, more than 1 million people gathered in Atatürk Airport in Istanbul in support of Palestinians in the besieged Gaza. The rally was attended by Turkish President as well as a number of ministers and parliament members. Erdogan said the Western countries that shed crocodile tears over the death of civilians in Ukraine are not only turning a blind eye to the death of Palestinian civilians in Gaza, but also supporting it. He added that Turkey is against this double standard and hypocritical behavior. Turkish president also went on to say that the West has mobilized its politicians and media to legitimize the massacre of the innocent people of Gaza.
The main culprit behind the massacre unfolding in Gaza is the West. The massacre in Gaza is entirely the work of